Philosopher David Abram has spent a lot of time with indigenous magicians, shamans, and healers in tribes all over the world. He himself is a sleight-of-hand magician who believes magic is both an art and a way of seeing the world. Steve Paulson asked to see some magic.
Well, all right. Here's a half dollar.
Uh-huh.
So first I'm going to let the coin roll over my knuckles. This is the way of letting the coin enter into an altered state of awareness. You know, it's made of metal, and so it can't drink anything.
I would think you might go into an altered state. I didn't know the coin was going to do that.
Well, yeah, you have to loosen it up before it will be able to do anything unusual. And so I just get it dizzy like this, and then if I squeeze it tightly, it should fade out of awareness.
What happened to that coin?
Here it is. You see, it just goes with a wave and then comes back with a wave. Come on back. It's hard to get it back, but if I blow on it, there. This is just a little bit of sleight of hand. One can take an object like this and push it even through the back of one's hand. There. It just comes right out the other side.
Wow. I should tell listeners, I mean, we're sitting about 3 feet apart from each other, and boy, you are right in front of me, and you are making that coin disappear.
Magicians work with perception. We dance, we play within the field of perceptual experience. This is not that different from the uses of sleight of hand that go way back before our forebears existed. Sleight of hand had its uses in indigenous tribal forms of curing and folk medicine.
So you're saying the whole idea of the medicine man in those traditional cultures were kind of like sleight of hand magicians.
What I'm trying to suggest is that sleight of hand was one of the tools in the toolkit of the tribal shaman or medicine man or medicine woman. A bit of sleight of hand done adroitly is a kind of shock therapy that just knocks open the body through the gate of the eyes or the other senses, taking up a stone and having it disappear or float from one hand to the other, or taking up a lichen-encrusted rock and pushing it into the forehead of a client who is suffering from very severe headaches. It's a shock, and it gives the body a way of dropping whatever destructive or problematic pattern it is in the grip of.
But what's interesting is I think about some of the stories of fraud, I mean, in quotes, I guess. There are those stories some decades back of the so-called psychic surgeons in the Philippines, people who would stick their hand into someone's body and apparently pull out some bloody part of the body. And you're suggesting, yes, on one level it was trickery, but maybe on another level, this is the thing that was really healing.
Indeed. Although some of these folks were quite unethical in the way that they were wielding this very old tradition and bilking Westerners out of lots of money. But the tradition itself, the techniques were clearly very, very old, where one, with one's hands passing over the body of the patient or client, you sort of cut an invisible incision in the patient's abdomen if she's suffering in her midriff. Sometimes this is actually done with a sliver of mica, translucent or even transparent rock. You're holding it between two fingers. As you move your hands a few inches above the body, you cut a little slit in the epidermis, and the wound opens up there, a clear incision. And then the magician, uttering some strong mantras or prayers, he himself or herself is in a thick trance and would reach into that wound and withdraw from therein a bloody, gory gizzard of some large bird, for instance. This is the most efficacious way, the magicians would explain to you, of actually extracting a demon. Demons love gore. They love blood and gristle. And so if you can just get the person into a trance, lure that demon up to the surface where you've made that incision, and just at the last minute, introduce that gory object. The demon is sucked into this other body. So you can now show this gristly gizzard to the eyes of the patient and his family, and then, yes, toss it into the fire. Perhaps one would admit that there is a bit of trickery involved, but for the magician himself or herself, she would say that she's not tricking the patient. She's tricking the demon. You can't get the demon out of this person's body without tricking it.
Hmm. Now, from the perspective of modern science, this doesn't make any sense. What are we missing here? I mean, why is this so powerful?
Well, I think it has been glimpsed somewhat within the halls of science. It's sometimes alluded to as the placebo effect.
Which perhaps is a lot more mysterious than we're led to believe.
Indeed. When we speak of placebo, we tend to throw all into one bucket a huge range of techniques and modalities that indigenous medicine people would have for specific ailments. They would use what we would call one type of placebo, and for another ailment, they'll use another type of placebo, and yet another. And they may have tens or hundreds of such different styles of perceptual tinkering. But it's the perceptual efficacy of such sleight of hand work that convinces the body that something is being released, torqued, or transformed within itself. And this enables the organism to actually undergo a change. And I'm not saying that this is right. That this is effective for every ailment or in every case, but it's astonishing the number of healings, quite remarkable healings that I documented over the course of several years in Indonesia, for instance, or in Nepal, living among the Dzongkhis.
So what you're saying is that for centuries, for millennia probably, our ancestors lived in these kinds of cultures that valued magic.
Magic, as I've suggested, is at its base nothing other than the sense of the world itself being all alive through and through, the sense that everything is animate, that everything moves.
So what happens to a culture that loses its magic?
Then the sense of the active agency of other than human realities, the power and potency of the trees and forests themselves, the power of the winds, the potency of the ground underfoot, and the fact that that ground, it's not just an object, it is a presence that feels our steps as we walk upon it. So there's a sense of respect and reciprocity in relation to the rest of nature. When magic is dismissed as just merely an illusion, nature itself begins to be conceived as a set of inert, inanimate objects and is spoken of continually as just a clutch of purely objective, measurable processes, well, then we begin to withdraw from our senses and live more and more in our heads or in a set of abstractions or spending our time more and more online or on screens. But the rest of nature begins to fade from our awareness. It's not felt or seen or touched with anything like the poignancy and intensity that it's felt with in any deeply indigenous culture.
I'm wondering if we have our own kind of magic, especially with writing, with the alphabet. I mean, if you think about it, you know, these little scrawls of ink
indeed
can conjure whole worlds.
They do indeed. I have to admit that writing itself is an astonishing magic, the magic that broke us away from the old ancestral indigenous style of perception. Writing, when it comes in, is this very new form of magic, and it's experienced as a kind of spell. Indeed, it's not by chance that the word spell has this double meaning, to arrange the letters in the right order to spell a name and also to cast a spell. So if you come down in the morning to the breakfast table and you open the newspaper and you focus your eyes on these inert bits of ink on the page, they suddenly seem to speak. And you witness visions of conversations happening in other parts of the world, of events unfolding in Afghanistan or in the White House. This is animism. It is not that different from the indigenous tribal elder stepping out of the village, walking along a trail and focusing her eyes on a spider spinning its web and suddenly feeling herself addressed by the spider. We just do it with our own scratches and scripts.
David Abram is a philosopher and ecologist. He's the author of Becoming Animal and The Spell of the Sensuous.